now. From the 1967 Boston Marathon, where Catherine Switzer, the founder of 261 Fearless, was almost prevented from completing the race, right through to the current day, women often face issues of gender inequality. The guest on this 261 Fearless Empowerment Talk is Stacey Copeland, a pro boxer and the current Commonwealth champion and former England footballer. She shares the difficulties she has faced in her sporting journey and how she is now taking steps to bring about wide change, to create a world where everyone can be free to pursue their passions regardless of their gender. Hello, thank you very much for joining us. I'm Juliet McGrattan, your host for this 261 Fearless Empowerment Talk today. So 261 Fearless is a global network which uses running to unite and empower women all around the world. And we're really passionate about improving the health and well-being of women from all different backgrounds and cultures. We also like to use our global platform for education. And this is why we have our series of empowerment talks, chatting to women who are high profile, influential, working in roles in sport, health, business, leadership roles. And we love to chat to them so we can learn from them, we can be inspired and motivated by them. And I'm really delighted today that we have a special guest, Stacey Copeland. Stacey's going to be talking to us about closing the equality gap. She is a professional boxer, a Commonwealth champion nonetheless. She also does some radio work, and she is the founder of Pave the Way, a movement helping women and girls of today to overcome some of the challenges and remove some of the barriers that are there in terms of equality, making sure that everybody has an equal start and an equal footing. So, Stacey, thank you very, very much for joining me.
No, thank you very much for having me.
I would really like to start, if it's okay, just kick off by asking you a few kind of quick questions, because I know lots of our listeners won't know you, and it's just a great way to find out a little bit more about you. So, is that okay?
Yep.
Cool. So, where do you live?
Manchester.
And what's your occupation?
I'm a professional boxer, but I also present a radio show on BBC Radio Manchester. My predominant job, if you like, at the minute is public speaking. Mm-hmm. Obviously not happening in the same way or as much during lockdown. A lot of it's virtual now, but usually in ordinary times, I'm here, there and everywhere, at companies, businesses, schools, doing public speaking. So that's the majority of my work now. I work in a school one day a week, working in personal development. With the students there, so I'm actually there tomorrow, and then, as you pointed out, I've helped pave the way, but we only got charity status about 10 weeks ago during lockdown, so
congratulations.
Not been able to progress that much yet, obviously, but that, you know, going forward will be more of a presence in my life.
Wonderful. Oh, congratulations, that's a great. And can I ask, who has been your kind of mentor or inspiration?
The people that I know, the people around me, and, you know, when it comes to so-called famous people, obviously we know very famous athletes and other people in public life, and you can admire what they've done, absolutely, because some of the things people have achieved are incredible. But when it comes to being actual role models for me, it's always people who I know, because I know their flaws, I know what they've been through, I know their true heart and what they're about, and the things that they do consistently every single day. And so for me, role models are people that I work with who give the very, very best every single day to the children we work with without a massive song and dance or a huge reward. They do it because they care, and obviously people amongst my family and friends who are doing the best every day, looking after the children, working, to me, I've values that I can really admire. So it tends to be people that I know.
That's great. What would you say, a bit of a tricky question maybe, what would you say your dream for the future was?
I'd say that it's, as a boxer, my main goal has been to win a world title, especially since winning the Commonwealth title. But outside of that, my big thing is, if I can ever use sport in a way to inspire or make a positive difference to others, I will. So that day in, day out is me living out my dream, if you know what I mean, because it's just such a fantastic, I mean, it's so powerful sport. It's one of the most powerful things on the planet for making a difference. So if you can use it in that way, it's a real privilege. But I think in terms of specifics, it would be to really develop, pave the way into something that can be part of really changing the way that we look at gender, because pave the way is about both genders. You know, the stigma that males face in some careers like nursing, social work, and in physical activities like ballet. And obviously there's far more barriers that women face in terms of careers and sports. So, you know, the thicker the work will be there, but I think it's something that affects, you know, and sure. I think if we make one better, it helps the other as well. So to be able to impact that in a real way would be certainly a big vision of mine, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, let's kind of explore that topic a bit further with our theme of closing the equality gap. And I know a little bit about your story, but perhaps you can share, you know, what age you were when you first got interested in sport and how that happened.
So there were two sports that I really loved as a child, which were football and boxing. To be honest with football, I've no idea how I got interested, because everyone in my family, to be honest, the rubbish of football, no offence if they're not watching this, but they are. So it wasn't that kind of thing. Like, nobody, you know, got me involved in that way. I didn't watch anyone else play football in my family. But at school, I remember all of the boys playing football every playtime and dinner time and just wanting to join in. I don't know why that was or how it happened. And it was ridiculous, really, to think about it, because I was the only girl and absolutely no other girls were playing. They were, you know, at the side doing that thing with elastic bands and hopscotch and having weddings and all of that. And it just wasn't, I was like, no, that's not for me. And I just wanted to play football. So I don't know quite how that happened. And then it was very difficult back then because the FA, the Football Association, didn't yet officially recognise girls and women's football. So no, like, proper league structures and real opportunities for girls in football back then, but you also weren't allowed to play with the boys. So although the ban was lifted, there wasn't an actual pathway to become a footballer. So I went and played on the school team, and that's when in the first game I was asked to leave the pitch by a parent and coach under the team, which was a horrible experience as a child. But then, of course, I had my hair cut short so I could pretend to be a boy and play on the team. And that's how that manifested in football. Now in boxing, it was very much directly related to my family, because my dad was a boxer. My granddad ran our boxing gym, so they took me in the gym from being a little kid. And again, you know, all of my siblings and cousins were taken in the gym, but not everybody liked it, but I did. I just absolutely loved it, and I did everything that all my little lab mates did, all the training, the circuits, going to the shows. I loved the challenge of the, you know, both mentally and physical that boxing brings. And when I got to the age of 11 and I went to get my medical card to box, that's when my granddad said, you can't box. And it was illegal for girls to box back then. And I just couldn't believe it, that I wouldn't get to do the sport I loved. So thankfully, at that point, opportunities were starting to happen for girls in football. And off I went into football for many years.
Wow. So who kind of mainly supported and encouraged you through that? And I guess a lack of sporting role models in boxing for you to look at? Who did you look up to, I mean, in your boxing?
In women? Oh, yeah, none. There was absolutely none. I didn't see any, like, either famous, let's say, female boxers, but I also, there weren't any around me, because I think what's interesting sometimes when you speak to athletes and so on, they don't always say that their role models or the people that they wanted to be like were really famous. Sometimes there was someone in their gym or in their neighborhood or at their school who was excellent at a certain sport and they wanted to be like them. And certainly there were a few lads in our gym who I really looked up to, and I loved the work ethic and the way they boxed and all of that, and looked up to them. But in terms of females, there just wasn't any at all when I was growing up, which is obviously very, very different now, which is a good thing. You know, there's a lot of females out there who are, you know, really quite famous now, and they're on the TV and stuff. And then there's a lot in gyms that girls can aspire to and look up to and stuff like that. So it's a lot different now.
And what would you say you're most proud of in your sporting journey so far?
I think two things. On a personal level, who I've become, because I know that when I was 16 and I got my first England call up for the England football team, it was just an incredible feeling getting that letter. I mean, obviously they get an email now, but back then it was a letter. Mm-hmm. I used to get a letter with like the three lions on, and it was, oh my God, it was just the most exciting thing in my whole life. And I went to my boss at the time. I worked in like this big factory warehouse place, and I explained I needed a week off and gave him this letter. And I said, there's nothing left on the rota, but, you know, I need a week off. And, oh, what for? And I gave him the letter. And he didn't really say much. And then he kind of looked at me and he said, you want a week off to play for a women's football team? I said, well, it is the England women's football team. You know, he made this big joke. He went, you know, and made all these jokes. And then I said, oh, it means a lot to me. Can I just take it unpaid? And he said, oh, if you mustard, and he signed it. And I walked out of that office feeling really small and feeling like an idiot, to be honest, for thinking it was such a big deal to play for the women's football team and not the England football team. Because we tend to call the women's and men's is just the football team, you know. And it affected me when I was, I didn't tell any of my colleagues I was going. I felt ashamed, really, of what I did and silly for thinking it was such a big deal. And when I was stood for the anthem, I thought, it's not really quite what I thought this would be, because it's not, you know, we're just not as good with the other. And I internalized all of that. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't have a voice to challenge him with. I just took it on and was like, yeah, well, what was I thinking? And kind of felt, you know, and now years later, I'm just not that person at all. I understand now why women have been held back, what our history is, what we've had to overcome, why we're looked upon as the other, and the disparities in opportunity and fairness and equality. And so it's very, very different now. So I'm proud of that journey, because this version of me wants to go back and tell that young 16-year-old, look, you know, the things that I've learned, and say, this is why people have these attitudes. And, you know, despite the views of others, you still feel proud of who you are, because we can't change every person like him sat behind that desk. You know, I hope that as many young people as I can possibly reach come out of those interactions, whether they've been judged by race, disability, sexuality, class, whatever it is, that they can still feel proud of who they are despite the views of others. And I want to go back to that younger me as a little girl, or 13, 14, 15, you know, all those ages, and say, you will become a woman who's proud of who she is and what she does. And I have. And so that's one thing that I'm proud of, that I've been through that cycle. And just the second thing is that, you know, that winning the Commonwealth title was amazing, and, you know, different things in football and all of that. They were great, but without a doubt, the proudest thing for me is whenever I've been able to use sport to impact others in a positive way. That's always what I'm proudest of, definitely.
Has an amazing ability to empower sport, doesn't it? And I just wondered how you feel sport has empowered you, and how sport can be used to empower others.
It's been incredibly important for me. I mean, that's one example that, you know, I didn't have a voice. I didn't give myself the right or the permission, and I didn't have the knowledge with which to challenge his language at that time. I just kind of thought, yeah, he's right. We're not as good at, you know, now I've got, I would say something very different to him, because I'm now aware of the amount of years that we were banned from football, you know, the things that women had to go through in the first instance, the disparities in investment and opportunity and media coverage. And I understand that bigger picture now, whereas I didn't when I was younger. So I didn't have the education and the awareness to even think about challenging that. And I also didn't have the pride in myself and other athletes to know that that isn't fair treatment and to speak up against it. I did later, and that's why when I won the Commonwealth title and didn't get the belt, I spoke up. And that's because by then I was different. So that's a direct example of how it's empowered me. But also, aside from the equality part of it, I think it empowers all of us, because it teaches us so much. I mean, you know, we build resilience without even really knowing it. We deal with change all of the time. Obviously, we're great at working in teams. Some of us, or we learn that we're not, and we try and figure it out. But we're great also at getting that feedback You know, from our coaches, it's a norm for us to, you know, something doesn't go right, either in the race or the game or the fight or whatever it is you're doing. And your coach will say, right, you should have done this, you should have done that. And then we adapt and we go back and we try and apply that. And I think that's really, really useful in other areas of life. Mm-hmm. We can get that feedback and adjust, take it on, make the necessary changes and go and be better. And I think that when you apply that to other areas of your life, I think that's really, really useful, either as an individual personal development or in your career, as a parent, as a friend, whatever. I think that's really, really helpful to always be looking at what can I do better. We do in sport, we look at those margins all of the time. I mean, we'll be thinking, what can I change my recovery shake? What can I do in my nutrition? Can I get orthotics in my shoes? Should I stretch more? You know, all the tiny things that we're looking at to get those little gains. If you apply that to life, it can actually be really helpful, I think. So there's loads and loads of ways that that can make you feel empowered, because it kind of gives you a little toolkit with which to use to deal with setbacks, change, resilience, difficult times. And I've certainly found in lockdown, that's one thing that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. And I guess also the confidence to stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah, like I say, those two examples, the one when I was 16 with my boss when I was playing football, and then the one when I was, 34? You know, there's a big gap in between, but I was a completely different person by then. And when I didn't get the Commonwealth belt, I spoke up about it and I challenged it. I wouldn't have done that as a young woman, because all I would have done was felt like, well, yeah, it's not really the same, is it, me getting it? Because, you know, it's just women's sport. That's how I would have felt. And that's certainly how I felt as a 16-year-old. As a 34-year-old, I didn't feel like that at all. Yeah. I felt like, you know, I thought, I'm worth this. I deserve it. This is unfair. And when I didn't get the belt and I got back and I rang the head of the Commonwealth Boxing Council, and, you know, I inquired about the belt. Like I said, I wouldn't have done that as a 16-year-old. I just would have said, oh, well, that's a shame. And, you know, just felt bad and sort of sneaked off quietly. But I rang and I asked about it, and was told that the problem with the belt was that the manufacturers of the replica belt had ceased production. So I asked what's that got to do with me? And was told that they do replica belts for women and real belts for men. So I said, my God, why is that? And he said, well, he said, there's more money in men's boxing. I said, I know, but if it meant there was going to be no belt at all, surely I should have been given the option to get it with my own money, because I'm never going to get that moment back. And it was horrible after the fight, not getting that belt and not having that moment with my coach to raise the belt in the ring and have those pictures that last a lifetime of those precious memories. But that wasn't the worst moment, to be honest. I thought it would be, but it wasn't. In fact, it was coming back to the airport, because everyone was so excited about this belt. And I hadn't had the heart to tell everyone there wasn't one. I didn't want to put a dampener on things. But when we got to the airport, to Manchester Airport, after that 36-hour journey back, loads of our friends and family were there to surprise us. And not having the belt to share with them in that moment was heartbreaking. It was really, really like gut-wrenching. And I knew that was wrong. I was no longer willing to accept that kind of thing. And so I said to him, you know, well, there's nothing we can do about what's happened, but how quickly can I have a real belt? To which he said, well, they're quite expensive, so unless you've got a sugar daddy, you probably won't be able to have one. Which the injustice, the rage of injustice in me was boiling my blood, let's say. And there's a few things I could have said, but, you know, I know we have to be mindful about how we address these things, particularly as women. And because they'll say we're hysterical and we, you know. So I said, you know, you shouldn't have said that. And I did challenge it, you know, and I said, well, something's got to be done. And that's when they agreed to make the Women's Commonwealth title belt, which I received eventually. I won it in the July and I got it in December, but it's good now it's available for future female champions. That's one example of that, you know, literally finding my voice and or not finding it, but giving myself permission to use it. And what was part of that was being aware of why we've been held back, why we're behind, as people say, men's sport all the time and compared all the time with they're not as good as. And, you know, seeing all the, from big things like being banned to seemingly little things like the fact that when sport's reported on, it's, you know, women's cricket, and cricket, women's football and football, women's rugby and rugby, you know, and you just don't get that at things like the Olympics. Mm. No commentator ever says, you know, coming up next, we've got the women's javelin, and then we'll have the javelin. What are you talking about? You know, but we accept that in mainstream sport, and it has an impact. Those little things have an impact. So now I'm aware of that. And yeah, so definitely sport has given me that anyway, 100%.
And I mean, how do you feel about the inequality that you've faced? How does it make you feel, and why have you decided to kind of stand up and fight for a change?
It makes me feel sickened, to be honest, deeply frustrated, and exhausted sometimes, with feeling like we're trying to push, as I'm sure you do, a huge boulder uphill. But having said that, I feel that way about all injustice. You know, I haven't personally experienced all of it. You know, I'm heterosexual, so I haven't experienced a lot of the stigma and the barriers that the LGBT community face. You know, I'm not an ethnic minority, so I don't have a disability. So there's a lot of things that I haven't experienced. But as a female in sport, and as a working class kid as well, in certain environments, that's sometimes a barrier. So I can only speak from, you know, with any authenticity about those things, but I can certainly feel compassion for others, you know, the groups who face barriers. So any kind of injustice like that, it just makes, that's the only way I can describe it, really. It's like a sick feeling in my tummy, and like some sort of electricity, but the bad kind, running through my veins, that it turns me inside out, and I just can't, you know, any longer be quiet about those things, whereas I used to be. So yeah, that's just how it makes me feel. It's that rage of injustice, you know, the burning sense of injustice, and it's the rage that makes you want to do something about it, and that becomes a different kind of fire, and hopefully we can use it to light other fires in a positive way.
Yeah, and I guess that's what's driven you to found Pave the Way. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about Pave the Way?
Yeah, of course. So it started in 2017, actually, just as a project. And that was when I made my debut in boxing, my professional debut. And well, usually when you as a professional boxer, you have a nickname. So you might be, I don't know, you know, the hitman, the assassin, or whatever. My nickname amongst my friends is SpongeBob SquarePants. Okay. So it's hardly an intimidating boxing name. So I couldn't really use that. When I turned professional, I decided I wanted to go with something that I stood for, something that, you know, I believed in. And I don't really know where Pave the Way came from. Obviously, it's already a phrase, but how it quite came to me, I don't know, but it did. So I decided, right, that's what I'll have on my kit. That's what will be my thing for me. And, you know, it was two-sided. I wanted to pave the way for women in my sport by me doing it and, you know, showing that pathway from amateur through to professional. And I also, in a wider way, wanted it to be, you know, sort of about paving the way for women and girls in general. So it did start off just about girls and women. Mm-hmm. And we did a project around it for 1 week, which was obviously just called the Pave the Way Project. Did loads of school visits, community visits. We did a photo exhibition of women who work in sport, because I feel like women who work in sport are almost completely invisible. Very, very hard for people to name CEOs or, you know, top coaches or anything like that. And I wanted to do something about that, because I feel like if, you know, young girls are interested in sport, but maybe they're not in a sport that they could earn a living from, or they're not competitive, you know, they don't enjoy that part, but all of the skill sets they've got combined with the passion for sport could give them a great career in sport. So we did this exhibition that's now on permanent display at the Velodrome in Manchester, of women in all sorts of sporting careers. So journalists, physiologists, football agents, football pitch inspectors, all sorts of things. And that was it, really. After the week, you know, we'd had a fantastic week. It had been such a positive. And then, I don't know, it just seemed to resonate with so many people, and they started using the Pave the Way hashtag and asking about it, and thought, you know what, that I kind of need to do something else with this, and it just kept going. So we set up these inspiration days where we had women who work in traditionally male-dominated careers. So we had female pilots, female engineers, females who work in construction, and all sorts of things. And it was just, I don't know, it really seemed to work. So we thought, right, you know, we need to keep going. And now, obviously, we've set it up as a charity. Now, the two ways it's changed in the 3 years is that it's no longer just about sport, because through doing the public speaking, I met so many women in law, in tech, in construction, who faced very, very similar barriers to me, but in their industries. And I thought, wow, what more powerful than sport and business coming together? I mean, we see what happens when sport and business comes together. Pretty phenomenal things. And no major sporting event can happen without the two. You know, you need that business element, whether that's corporate sponsorship, whether that's people who understand how to run logistically a big talk, whatever it is. So I thought, we can kind of do this together, where sport's at the heart of Pave the Way, but in a way that can impact other workplaces for women. And then the other way it's changed is it's about both genders, because there's so many parents who've contacted me who've got a little boy who absolutely loves ballet and, you know, really wants to do it, and just has faced so much, you know, ridicule and stigma and being called names that they just give up. And that, I just can't accept that either, that it's, and it's part of the same problem. It's this, not so much gender, but our view of masculinity and femininity and what attributes should be assigned to each. And actually not all of us fit into that. And the thought of kids just giving up on what they absolutely love because of this is, I mean, imagine if sport would have been taken away from the likes of me and you and a lot of the people who'd be watching this. Imagine if sport or physical activity just was not part of your life because you'd given up and never gone back to it through fear of that stigma. Imagine what that would take away for me. You know, what sport's meant to me, and that's getting taken away still from young people and I just think that's awful and we need to do better. So that's how it's changed. It's now about both genders and it's about other industries too, because I think what happens in sport impacts every other aspect of society, and that is why it is so hugely important.
And what role do you think sport or maybe physical activity in general can play specifically in closing this equality gap?
I think it's hugely important. I think at the elite level, it can be important. And, you know, I'm not under any illusions that impacts everyone, because it doesn't. I know there's a lot of women I talk to, because I'm really, really fortunate that I get to be around elite athletes, but I also work in a school, so I'm around young women. And I do stuff like classes in the community, so I'm around women who just do activity for recreation or weight loss or whatever, you know. So it's very, very different to that elite athlete mindset. And I'm really fortunate in that way, because it gives you a wider range of people to learn from and listen to. And so I know that sometimes women at the elite level, you know, everyday women are actually put off by that sometimes, who, you know, that elite sort of vision of these super human machines who are doing these amazing things are not, it's kind of like, oh, it's nothing to do with me, especially if they've grown up with that I'm not sporty label. It's actually a put off. So it's not for everyone, but I do think that at the elite level, what can happen is it's so raw how sport happens. You know, the underdog can just come out of nowhere and win. It's unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. It's so exciting and so emotional. It draws you in, whether it's male or female. If you're invested in that game or that, you know, situation that's unfolding, it becomes about winning and losing. And like we've seen with the netball team and the hockey team, it didn't matter that they were female or they were this and that. It was that they were representing Great Britain or England, and you get behind them, and suddenly we're against Australia, there's seconds on the clock, and we win. That's all that matters in that moment. It's raw emotion. And I think that seeing women display those characteristics of physical strength, but also mental and emotional strength, resilience, aggression, competitiveness, I think it's important for us to see that, to see what we're capable of. Not just for men to see that, but for other women to see that. Mm-hmm. So I think elite sport does it on that side. And also seeing women's bodies on display for what they can do rather than their sexual appeal. That's really, really important distinction. And yes, you know, a lot of top female athletes will have sexual appeal for some people. That's absolutely fine. I'm not saying that they haven't. I'm just saying that they're there and we admire their bodies because of what they can do. You know, when you see the likes of Dina Asher-Smith, you know, powering down the track, your first thought isn't, you know, oh, wow, she looks great in that. It's, which she does, but it's not about that. Do you know, it's about, wow, look at what her body is capable of doing. You know, and then there's, you know, the whole range of sports that we see and the amazing things that male and female athletes are able to do with the bodies is fantastic. And we're so used to seeing women only have the bodies displayed because they're deemed sexually attractive rather than what their bodies can do. And we tie that value in with their value as a human being, that they're more valuable because they're pretty or attractive or whatever. And there's a danger in that, especially for young people. So on the elite level, that's dead important. But at the, you know, grassroots or everyday or recreational level, I think sport, that's where it can have just a phenomenal impact. And quite often in that way, women are, you know, a lot of the women I talk to are far more interested in going to something that their friend has asked them to go to or that their friend already does, because that's where they feel comfortable. And like the women who I do like the community boxing class with once a week, they can come in, you know, leggings and a massive baggy t-shirt if they want, because it's the boxing gym. It's not, and you know, they don't want to go in like a really amazing gym with all these lights. They're actually quite put off by it. They want to come into the boxing gym where they can wear what they want, they can be who they are, they can feel comfortable. And because the mates ask them to go along and they have a laugh with the mate, it's very, very social. When everybody gets there, the first 5 minutes while we're stretching is just like, and such a body's done this, and then that happened, and I'm really angry about this. It's fantastic. But it's, that is real therapy. It's like an incredible support network of people who are there. And then, of course, you've had people go through really serious things and everyone's there for each other. And during lockdown, you know, it's, that has been our support hub community. It's not come from watching reruns of elite athletes at the Olympics, although that's very handy. It's come from all of us, you know, being mums every day and going to, you know, or looking after each other's children or your friends' children, going to work, trying to do homeschooling, all of the things that are predominantly placed on women in the household and in some cases a single parent. So it's been really tough. And then 3 times a week for an hour we've had this Zoom session where all of that gets put over there and they can be them, have a laugh with the friends and do this bit of physical activity. So what that gives to people, I can't say, because it's different for everybody, but I know it's given sort of the you know, on a big scale, it changes the perception of women when it's at the elite level, I think. And that manifests in other areas, but on a local level, on a one-to-one or being part of a group level, it's given, even during lockdown, this amazing community spirit of togetherness, belonging, support, and a bit like, it's like a positive petrol tank. That's how I like to think of it, that sometimes your petrol of positivity tank can go down and down and down, and then we all get together and it shoots right back up, and then you're able to go out there again and face the world or whatever. And I just think, you know, some of the women in the group now started open water swimming together. Some of them have done 5K runs together. The difference in them is phenomenal, that they're getting to do that and feel, do you know what, this is something for me. Because a lot of the time they spend doing stuff for everyone else. So all of those ways and more, it makes a massive difference. It's crucial.
And I guess, big question, but what as a society can we do to change this, to really close the gap?
I mean, God, there's so much. I think when we're talking about elite sport, I think that I've alluded to before, the language that we use is really crucial. And it's like last week, everyone was saying, football's back. Men's football is back. Women's is not, because they have cancelled the rest of the season. So if we were to say across the news channels, you know, men's football is back, even that subtle change would make people say, oh, where's women's football gone then? Because it's easy to ignore if we just say football's back, when actually we mean only one gender of football has been allowed to come back. And I think, like when after the Sports Personality Awards last year, I was watching the news the next day and they were saying, oh, it's no surprise that the cricket team, you know, did really well and they've got a couple of awards. Da, da, da. I thought they were talking about the women's cricket team because I knew they'd had a fantastic season and they'd done amazing things. And then they said, and we've got some clips, and it went to the men's cricket team. And I was like, why didn't you say men's cricket team then? Why did you know what I mean? It was just that, as if, you know, if it's women, it's the other but the cricket team, that means men's, the proper one. So even those subtle changes would be important. Then, of course, I mean, we've seen in lockdown, really, the disparity in the way that we treat, approach and talk about women's sport and all this negativity of, you know, I saw in a major newspaper the other day, a headline saying fears that women's sport could be lost after COVID-19. What does that mean? You know, and if you're a young girl who, you know, your whole life is sport and you've got all these aspirations and dreams to do something in sport and you read that headline, what are we saying to them? You know what I mean? What we wouldn't, I mean, would we actually say that about any other group of, an entire group of people and their industry? It's just bizarre. But I keep reading all these headlines about how it's going to disappear. It's going to set us back 10 years. We'll lose momentum. Da, da, da. And it's like, why is that allowed? Why is that so acceptable? We should have used the opportunity of lockdown, since so much has changed anyway, to completely change the playing field and level it out a bit more. There was no sport on. Why didn't we just put loads of women's sport on the television? You know, obviously that wasn't happening in real time, but we could have replayed loads and loads of women's sport. We can make a commitment to having 50-50 coverage, especially on the BBC, since 52% of licence fee payers are women for the BBC. So why not represent them? It's cheap at the moment, you know, to get the rights to it, because it's, you know, it's not got the same massive corporate fee involved with it. So there's loads of reasons why it'd be great to get the women's stories are really engaging. We're great storytellers, and we you know, we talk about our experiences in sport in a very different way. So we're approachable. You know, we're mostly, all the female athletes I've been involved with are really keen to pass things on to the next generation because of what they've had to go through to get where they are. So I don't know. I think there's loads of positives why we should be doing things differently and putting a focus on women's sport. And then in terms of everyday activity, make it more accessible. Like, let's listen to women and say, what is it that's stopping you being able to go to, you know, the gym? Or do you need a creche? Do you need, what do we need to be providing for women to be able to get the opportunity to take part in sports and activities? Like, what are the barriers that are there? How can we stop year nine girls? In fact, it's the new research shows it's happening even earlier than year nine, from giving up on sport. What's blocking the way? And you know what? If it's something as minuscule as that we want to insist that they wear a pleated skirt and a t-shirt, well, God, get rid. Do you know, why are we insisting on these things still? That was a problem I ran into continually at school, that they would let me play football with the boys during PE, but I had to wear the girls' PE uniform. And I'd say, I'm not playing football in a skirt. Why would I play football in a skirt? Well, you've got to. And I had this big argument with them. And then, of course, it landed. You know, I used to get suspended and actually, I was right, in my view, that I should have been able to wear what the boys were wearing. I mean, it was different enough being a girl. Then I have to go and play in a skirt with all the boys. Are you for real? Like, but these are the barriers that we've put in the way for years and haven't seen past them, do you know? And we need to be doing a lot better to look at what can we do differently. So, yeah, loads of stuff.
I mean, and yes, like you say, the language, the media coverage, sharing the stories. And what about as individuals? What could we go and do tomorrow or next week that would help this?
I guess it depends on your role. I mean, interestingly, some of the women who are decision makers and most influential are not women who take part in sport and don't have a sporting background. And that's fine too. You know, they might... just, you know, just like with men, there's a lot of men who work in sport who've never been an athlete, never been really driven to take part in sport, but they just love sport. They love something about, and a lot of journalists are like that, actually. The people who, you know, enjoyed a bit of a game of football here and there, but, you know, weren't that good and weren't really competitive, but they absolutely love sport. And they're so good at what they do because they know everything about the game. You know, they're like an encyclopedia for sport. And I meet a lot of them now. I'm at the BBC who, like I say, they don't even run like a mile a day or do anything, yet their whole life is reporting on sport. So I don't think you have to be, you know, some phenomenal athlete yourself to make a difference in sport. You might be fantastic at marketing and know exactly how to market sport without ever going for a run yourself. Some people have that skill set. So I think it depends on your role. If you're great at marketing, use that. If you're great at logistics, get involved, volunteer for, you know, your local park run or whatever it might be. and lend that skill set to helping, because you don't all have to set your own thing up. Otherwise, we'd actually be diluting what other people do. You have to find, like, your need, like this mum runs, does something different to what you do. So that's great. But you don't want to all be doing the same stuff, because it just takes away. This girl can. That's a different angle again. Great. You know, there'll be something for everyone. But if there's not something you're passionate about to set up yourself, then lend your skill set to something that's already happening, and you'll make that even better and give them even more push. So I think it totally depends on what is natural and authentic and true to you that you're passionate about, and use that. And for some people, like, you know, the lady who set up this Mum Runs, that'll be setting up this huge thing. But of course, Jenny, who set up this Girl Can, who was the CEO, I think, at the time of Sport England, was completely non-sporty. That was her own label she put on herself, a non-sporty woman. And she set up this Girl Can, but it was set up for other non-sporty women. So she understood, you know, me setting up this Girl Can wouldn't have been any good, because I'm not non-sporty. Like, my entire life is sport, and that's where I feel most comfortable. So how great is that, that a woman who'd always thought of herself as non-sporty was able to set up this thing that spoke to women who felt like that? Fantastic. So we've each got our different role to play, I guess.
Yeah, I think that was crucial, isn't it? Just having a real understanding what you know, and if it's somebody coming from an inactive background, then they're the best ones to come up with the solutions. Absolutely. And the answers. Absolutely. Breaking down the barriers. So just kind of thinking, you know, what advice would you give to a girl or a woman who's either in sport, or you mentioned now thinking more widely in business, what advice would you give them if they're coming up against barriers of equality?
I think all I can say is the stuff that's helped me. I mean, everyone will have a different path. So I don't have sort of, you know, specific advice, because I think we all have to figure that out in our own way. But certainly what I can say is the things that have helped me, and that might be helpful to others. So one of the things definitely was finding out, I don't want to say educating myself, because that sounds patronizing to others to say educate yourself. So I would just say finding out and learning about the history. So certainly for me, the history of women's boxing, learning out about, you know, how we came to have the right to box, which obviously was Jane Couch, who fought for that with Sarah Leslie and Dina Rose, the two solicitors, in 1998. And what they went through in court, it wasn't actually on the basis of gender, it was on the basis of the right to earn a living. And women weren't allowed the right to earn a living through boxing in this country, because the boxing board wouldn't give us a license. So that's how they fought it. It was actually on the right to earn a living. You know, learning about football, how the ban wasn't lifted till 1971, why they banned us in the first place, and how incredibly successful the women's football teams were prior to that ban. When the FA got involved, how, so all of this, you know, it was some of which I've lived through. You know, I've lived through the times when you played for England, you took a week off work unpaid, you had hand-me-down kits, you didn't have nutritionists or strength and conditioning people or any of that, you know, and now, seeing, you know, I've got a few friends who are footballers, and I've done a couple of boxing sessions with the, you know, women's sort of Super League teams. So through chatting to them, you know, and I've been to interview them for a Pave the Way series I did for Granada Reports. The training facilities are incredible. The kits are made for women. So that, you know, they fit us better, they look better, they feel better. They've got, you know, physiotherapists, they've got nutritionists, they've got strength and conditioning specialists. Phenomenal. It's completely different. So some of it I've actually seen that change. But if you're really young, you won't have had time to live through that, obviously. So I'd say find out about it. Speak to the, you know, players and coaches from a different time and what it used to be like. Learn about the legislation that was put in place. You know, obviously, I never knew anything about Title IX until I went on a scholarship to America. And then when I learned about it, I was like, wow, this is amazing. Those men and women who fought for this in 1972 before I was born, I'm now benefiting from it without knowing them, without them knowing me. That's phenomenal. And that's why I know, you know, the girls and women who'll benefit from what I'm doing now might not ever know me, and I might not ever know them, but that's okay, because that's been done for me. It's been done for us by the women who came before us, and now it's our job to do it for the next generation. So I definitely say learn about the history, because then it gives you the tools and the equipment with which to challenge these ideas that we're just not good. It's not true. It's really not true. We've been held back. And when I get asked this question of when will women's sport catch up to men's, well, it's like a 100-meter race. We're at the start line and men are already at 60, 70, 80 meters. And that's not because of anything against men. It's men and women that have held women's sport back and men and women that create the progress together. But when you look at media exposure, investment, opportunity, social stigma, we're still at the start line comparatively. So it's a pointless question, but we do get asked it a lot, don't we, when they're going to catch up. So I think, learning about your history, obviously having examples of role models, either in your close-knit circle or at the elite level of women who've achieved amazing things. It's very, very difficult for somebody to say to you, women aren't capable of X, Y, and Z. If you can then say, what about Jasmine Paris? And they say, who's that? And you can say, well, she's a mum who had, a new baby and managed to not just complete, but win and beat the previous record by 12 hours of the Montane Spine Race. What's the Montane Spine? Oh, it's this. And then you go in to tell them about it and that she was also breast pumping milk at the same time. And they go, oh. And then you say, yeah. And then there's my other friend, Sarah Williams, who's done Marathon des Sables. What's the Marathon des Sables? Well, it's where, and if you've got these examples of these role models who are, not just, your Serena Williams, who, might seem out of reach for some people. And I get why, because she's this incredible, superstar. But everyday women who are mums and got ordinary jobs, and then they go and do this incredible stuff. So know the role models, know women that are achieving these amazing things. And then, like I say, also have that positive petrol tank, whoever that may be, the people in your life who, because this fight does get exhausting. It absolutely does. And when the other week, it happened to me when I just had a fantastic Zoom call with the Women's Sports Trust Unlocked program, where there's 41 athletes who are meeting each week and trying to, break down the barriers in women's sport. And the Women's Sports Trust are fantastic, what they do. And then I go onto Twitter and I see the BBC Sport had put a thing on saying, discussions underway as to whether the Women's Football Super League will get to complete the season or not. And then underneath, just one after the, why don't they have an iron off? Great, I'm glad I hope the Women's League gets cancelled because I'm hungry. Why don't they have a bake off? Great, go and get me a sandwich. It's rubbish anyway. Nobody cares. And I just literally went from there to complete, because I thought, are we really still doing this kitchen thing and this, we're rubbish? And I thought, my God. And when you look at the things like the World Cup last year, and I think everybody in every fight has been through this, whether, whatever injustice it's against, has thought a little bit, there's a moment and you go, wow, everything's going to be different for me. And then you're back to it. And that's the exhausting bit that you think, look, everybody's seen it now. And, all of us went in a local pub or a local whatever, and people talk about the Women's World Cup and the Women's England team and cheering for it. And you're like, there's a change happening. And then you're back to this and you go, that's when you need that positive petrol tank of people to lift you back up, because we can't do anything if we're on empty. So we have to do self-care and self-preservation sometimes and have those people to lift us up so we can carry on that fight. So that's really important. And then to challenge yourself. So learn about the history, have the role models to look at, and that's everything in your toolkit that you can use to challenge this language. Have your positive petrol tanks and challenge yourself. It's really helpful to put yourself out of your comfort zone so that if you've experienced what that's done for you, why that's so important for other women, and you'll want to do it more, so, and pass it on. So I'd say those four things have helped me, and hopefully they help others.
Brilliant. Yeah, and as you kind of highlighted there, all about perseverance. It's not going to come easy, but keep going.
Definitely. And it doesn't happen change, does it? It doesn't just happen.
No, like, absolutely. You've got to work for it, haven't you?
The amount of people who said to me, because I couldn't go to the Olympics or the Commonwealth Games as a boxer because they don't have equal weight categories in boxing for women. And it was devastating. And the amount of people that would say, it'll change, be patient. And I'd go, yeah. And then, I actually thought about it. I thought, what's ever happened by people being patient? What change in the world, whether it was civil rights movement, whether it was, women having the right to vote, children's rights, none of that just happened. It happened because people made it happen and fought for it. And that's why it's essential that we don't just wait. You know, we do have to take action. It's not inevitable change. It's a tough, horrible, rocky road, but it's a road you have to tread in order to change things. It doesn't just, change has never just happened. It doesn't.
And just one little kind of final take home message, if you like, because as you know, 261 Fearless is all about empowering women through running and helping them to kind of step up and take responsibility for their lives and their actions. What would be your kind of final encouraging message to help women to get into physical activity?
Who aren't?
Who are not active, yeah.
Do you know what? I used to say that it's a bit like reading, and that if the first book I'd ever picked up was about physics, I'd have thought I hated reading it had I not picked up another book. But then I was listening to Jenny speaking, who set up This Girl Can, and she said that people used to say that to her, and she used to think, no, I don't like any of the books. And I thought, maybe that's not the right approach then, because it's so hard for me to think that there wouldn't be something physical that people could do that wouldn't improve the life. It's so hard for me to not believe that. But so I still have to go back to the thing that try as many things as you can. And just because of the amount of stories I've heard, just like Joe Mosley, who talks so articulately and just in such a passionate way that resonates. And, you know, I'm not in her position. I've always been a sporty kid, and I'm a younger woman. So I've not been through the menopause yet, and I've not been not sporty. So we're completely different spectrums in terms of that. But what totally resonated with me was when she talked about those first few activity sessions she did and what a difference it made to her, you know, experience of menopause, but also as a woman, as a mum, just as an individual. That I can really relate to, because yes, sport and being competitive and wanting to win and sport for performance is massive in my life. But I am also a regular person who can do a day at work where loads of really difficult situations can happen at school with children who want to help and we can't. And, you know, you're so annoyed at the injustice of the world that's impacted this child, and you're drained and you're tired, and maybe you didn't get a good night's sleep. And then you're sat in traffic and you're like, oh, and I get to the gym and I leave like, the world's great. You know, literally within an hour, I could have got there going, the world's rubbish, everything's unfair, what's the point? And this traffic, whatever. And then I go in and I can't think about all of that while I'm trying to perfect a technique or hit a pad, or just thinking, breathe, 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 because I'm so exhausted. I'm like, oh my God, I've got another 8 rounds. I can't do it. Yes, you can. No, I definitely can't. Yes, you can. You know, there's all that going on in your head. I can't be thinking about the injustice of the world and the traffic and that. I just get in and it's just that 1 hour of in the moment, which we don't get very often now in our lives. And I leave like, I don't know what it is, whether it's that being in the moment, it's the endorphins, it's whatever it does. And I just leave and I've seen my mates, I've had a laugh. It's just, it really is life-changing in micro bits, you know, which adds to it to a sum total. So, you know, with Jo, she's had a go at boxing now and she loves it. But with Jo, she obviously talks about, you know, stand-up paddleboarding, and that's not something that you have to be, you know, have mega cardio fitness for or a certain body type. Anybody can have a go at that. You know, it might be shooting. You know, Georgina Roberts, who's in the Unlock group, who does shooting. Again, you know, obviously they do fitness, but you don't. There's not that barrier of having to be super fit. There's loads of things you can try. It's that bit of the, you know, I'd say don't focus on the sport bit and the activity. Focus on taking your friends, being part of a social network, and what you'll get out of it in that way, I would say. And I think we tend to find that works really well with young girls, and a lot of the research shows that's more of a priority then. Than the winning or the competition bit. For some girls, that's dead important. But for others, it's the going with the mates, being with the friends, doing something, do you know what I mean, that might involve the children as well. And so, yeah, I'd say try and find something that suits you, that suits your personality, your attitude to sport, but definitely get involved with friends and take people with you, because I think having a laugh with your friends, that's something we can all do, whether it's, you know, sport or not.
Absolutely, definitely. Oh, well, thank you, Stacey. We could carry on chatting, I'm sure, but it's been really, really interesting to hear your story and your thoughts and hear what you're doing now to help make a difference going forward in the future. So really grateful to you for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be making this talk into a podcast as well. So if you want to listen to it again when you're out on a run or et cetera, you can always do that too. So great. Thank you very much, everybody. And thank you again, Stacey.
No, thanks for having me, and thanks for all that you do. It's just an incredible project, and I know you make such a difference in so many lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a privilege to be part of it. Thank you.